So the title for this evening's homily is His Kingdom of Self-Forgetful Love. There is a gripping scene in The Beauty and the Beast when the Beast is about to confess his love for Belle. Cogsworth, the enchanted clock, looked up with eager anticipation. He knew that if Belle pledged her love to the Beast, presto, the curse would be lifted from that kingdom. But here's the thing. As he was about to profess his love to Belle, she asked to be able to look into the mirror where she saw her father in great distress. Belle, as she looked into the mirror, asked permission to go to her father because she wanted to be able to help him in his plight. She was sobbing, and the Beast responded, "Go to him. Go to him." Well, at this point, Cogsworth comes into the room triumphant with expectancy as he declares, "I must say, things are going very swimmingly, don't you think?" To which the Beast said, "I let her go." And Cogsworth says, "What? You let her go? What are you talking about?" And the Beast said, "I had to, because I love her. I had to, because I love her." Now think about this for a minute. This is what Jesus Christ did for us by giving to you and me spiritual freedom. He has loved us so much that he will take the risk of letting us go. He will not force us to live in friendship and abide in his kingdom. And of course, what we see with Belle, because of the freedom of love, she will show the way of self-forgetful love, unlike this dude right here. Gaston, who's he looking at in the mirror? Himself. You see, if Belle is learning the way of self-forgetful love, Gaston is all about me love. It's all about me. And I want to suggest to you this afternoon, it all depends on who we're looking at in the mirror that will influence the way we live our lives. Will we live our lives selfishly, or will we learn the way of self-forgetful love? Our readings today are all about self-forgetful love. And to be a Christian is to say, in a world filled with people who are looking at themselves, this is perhaps one of the most self-absorbed times in the history of the Western world, we are called to be part of his kingdom, the kingdom of Jesus Christ, the kingdom of self-forgetful love. So let's think for a few minutes about how our readings invite us to consider this kingdom. I want to start with the psalm, because in the psalm we have what I'm referring to as the chain of self-forgetful love. And in the psalm, which we sang, there are five links in this chain that are identified. The first is worship. What is worship? Worship is to give worth to God. And why in the world would we give worth to God? Well, the psalm tells us why. "Oh, come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord our maker." You see, the thing with Gaston, he thought he was his maker. His life was to do with what he wanted to. But when we understand that God is our maker, the first link in the chain of self-forgetful love is to know that he is worthy of my worship because he is my maker. And then we come to the second and third links in our chain as our psalm speaks. Thanksgiving is to give thanks to God for the gift of our life And praise is to express our love for him because of who he is. Listen to how the psalm put it. Let us come into his presence with thanksgiving and make joyful songs to the Lord, songs of praise. And that brings us to song. Come, let us sing to the Lord. You'll notice that the Sunday Mass is replete with music, because in song, what do? We express our thanks and our praise. Choir, it is so great to have you back. And check out your new digs as well. We are delighted that you are here to lead us in praise. But here's the thing, St. Peter's Parish. I know you are the choir, and you are singing more and more and more and more. And I love it. One time it was said to me, I know that once you were a Protestant because you like to sing a lot, and you're right, I love to sing. And Protestants actually have a thing or two to teach Catholics about singing in the liturgy. And we can do it, and we are doing it. And it's right here in the Bible. It's a link in the chain of self-forgetful love. And then the last of the links, joy. Let us make a joyful noise to the Lord, the rock of our salvation. Now think about this with me for a moment. Everyone here craves joy. What blocks it? The psalm tells us only one thing blocks joy. It's not the softness and warmth of God's heart. It's not God's desire to love us, but it is our hardness, it is our coldness of heart. When a heart becomes hardened, it looks like this. And you know in that psalm it said, do not harden your hearts as they did at Meribah and Massah. Well, what's that about? Well, if you go over to the book of Exodus in the 17th chapter, we have this verse. And he called the name of the place Massah and Meribah because of the fault finding of the sons of Israel, and because they put the Lord to the test by saying, is the Lord among us or not? I find this profoundly helpful. Hearts become hardened when we're about finding fault. Are you ever a fault finder? I am. And do you know what happens? My heart looks like that. There's no joy. There's just negativity. And so we need to be aware that the chain of self-forgetful love can be broken by ingratitude, by fault finding, by doubting God. So that's the first point of this afternoon's homily. Don't forget the chain of this kind of self-forgetful love. And then we go to Paul. And I love what Paul says here. Love is the fulfilling of the law. There was a rabbi by the name of Hillel. And he said, I can recite all 620 commandments in the Old Testament. And they said, really, Hillel? Well, why don't you start? And he said, I would love to. And he stood like this on one foot, and he said, you are to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, and to love your neighbor as yourself. That is all 620 laws of the Old Testament. And that's exactly what Paul, the rabbi, is saying here. The whole of the commandments are fulfilled with this kind of love being the fulfillment of the law. But here's the challenge. We live at a time where we give primacy to how I feel. How I feel dictates what I do. And there's nothing wrong with our feelings, except that our feelings are not a very good gauge as to how to love. And so what we need to be aware of, what we have to be careful about, is that our feelings are real and we can't stop them. We're going to feel certain things. To try to stop our feelings would be like saying, I command you to stop letting gravity affect your body. It's impossible. So too with our feelings. But we don't have to let them be our boss. We can allow ourselves to grow in exercising our will. And our will is greater than our feelings. Let me write it or read it to you this way. We can't help feeling pain when we are hurt, either physically or emotionally, or feeling desire toward whatever appears desirable, whether it really is or not, or feeling aversion to what appears undesirable, whether it really is or not. But appearances can be deceiving. And it takes prudence, it takes practical wisdom to distinguish between appearance from reality, from what is truly good and what are false goods, real needs from felt needs. If sin did not appear to be attractive, we would all be saints. If sin did not appear to be attractive, we would all be saints. But sin is really attractive. So I like the way Peter Kreeft, a very well-known philosopher, theologian, and great writer, put it. It takes the three eyes of the soul, the eyes of faith, hope, and love, rather than the two eyes of the body, to see the divine image, that made in heaven label that comes on the tush of every newborn baby. This is the one law from the one God for the one life of the one person that you are. Listen. When we come to see ourselves in this way, when we understand that it takes the soul in order to truly perceive what it is to be human, then in turn, we are learning the way of self-forgetful love. Let me just quote this one more time. This is the one law of the one God for the one life of the one person that is you. Your whole life is about the fulfilling of the law, to love. But man, is that ever hard? This is like the hardest thing ever. Thankfully, God, when he became a human being in the person of Jesus Christ, said, I know it is. So let me give you a process of intervention, how you seek to bring about intervention. And it starts by recognizing in the kingdom of self-forgetful love, we need a watchman. A watchman in the Old Testament, as we heard in Ezekiel, was to look out for the enemy as the enemy was coming. And if the watchman did not sound the alarm, then he was responsible if the enemy was able to attack the city. If he did sound the alarm and the city wasn't prepared, he would not be responsible. And so some people say, I'm not my brother's keeper, my sister's keeper. I just live my life, you live your life, and that's the way it goes. What does that do for us? Not much. We're called to be watchmen. And in a particular way, the church is called to be the community where, as we are seeking to grow in the community of self-forgetful love, we're learning this way of what it is to be watchmen. And where this finds the greatest expression is we need to be warned of the enemies of love. Gaston is everywhere. And Gaston wants to undermine our freedom, wants to keep us bound in attitudes that separate and alienate us from God and one another. Enter today's gospel reading. What's Jesus getting at? Oops, I didn't want to go there quite yet. In this gospel, very simple in a sense. If you have been hurt by someone, go and seek to name the hurt with the person that has hurt you. But do it in a way that is going to be honest, but gracious. And the hope, of course, is that if you're learning to communicate in this way, that the person who has hurt you will be able to acknowledge it. Now, I've had a lot of experience at life, and I've had a lot of experience at denial, which is not a river in Egypt. No, denial is not being able to admit when I have hurt someone close to me. You know what I like to do? I like to self-justify. I like to sort of turn it back on the other person. But the last thing I want to do is just to sit there and to really listen, because it hurts like hell. Oh, know why? Because that's where it comes from, the pit of hell. To learn the way of Jesus is to learn the way of love. And it's scary. It means sitting down eye to eye and hearing the other person. And Jesus says, you know what? If it works, it leads to reconciliation. But Jesus is well aware of the fact that it might not work. I was listening to a podcast a while back of a man whose father was a terrible alcoholic. And they tried to bring about an intervention with the father. They had all of the kids in the living room. They had a counselor in the living room. And each kid went around the circle saying how their father's alcoholism had affected them. He denied it. He said, I don't have a problem. A couple of years later, this person on the podcast said, I was a teenager and I was sitting doing my homework. And my dad came into the room where I was, and he was weeping. And he said, I'm sick. I need help. Wow. It didn't happen at first, but eventually this man was able to enter into recovery and to get the help he needed. That's what Jesus is getting at, that sometimes this work of reconciliation is so difficult that you're going to need to take two or three people to be able to witness to what's happening. And right away, the person might not be able to acknowledge it. And then there's this very interesting thing. You might have to tell it to the church. What does that mean? It can mean many things, but this is what I want to say today. We don't have to keep our head banging against a wall forever and ever and ever and ever. There can come a time where a person's sin has so hurt you that it's appropriate to say, I don't need to take this anymore. You can let the person go. That's what Jesus means when he says, treat them like a tax collector or treat them like a Gentile. But here's the thing. Does that mean we don't need to forgive them? Of course not. We have to forgive them. Does that mean we don't pray for them? Of course not. We need to pray for them. Because Jesus loved the tax collectors. He loved the sinners, and he wanted to bring them into the community of his love. Let me conclude with this. How does this passage end? When two or three are gathered together in my name, I am there in the midst of them. Now, often we misinterpret this text. We think it's whenever two or three people gather together in the name of Jesus, he's there. At one level, that's true. But that's not what it means in the context of this passage. What it means here is when there has been a difference between two or three people and they're reconciled and they've forgiven and they're now a community, I am there in the midst because they are learning the way of self-forgetful love. To be a Christian is not for sissies. To live the life of self-forgetful love is the most courageous thing any one of you can do. But there's nothing better you can do with your life either. Because if we live the way of Gaston, this is how it ends. To learn the way of Belle, it ends here. This is our story. May we discover evermore the beauty of the chain of the psalm, that love is the fulfilling of the law. And even though it's as scary as all get out, to seek to follow Jesus' teaching about how we learn to reconcile. Because then, more and more, we will discover this amazing kingdom, the kingdom of self-forgetful love.